This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasman. Nuclear energy is having a moment. Recently, a conditional federal loan was granted to reopen the Palisades plant in southwest Michigan. This would make it the first shuttered nuclear plant in the country to be reopened.
There are some environmental groups that are taking a more neutral position here, but there is also a coalition opposing nuclear and the restarting of this plant. This coalition says nuclear power is dirty, obsolete, and creates radioactive waste. We asked Republican Representative Graham Filler, who supports expanding nuclear energy, about the waste issue.
All the nuclear waste created in the state of Michigan since the 1960s, I think, when we started, could fit essentially on one football field. It's small spent fuel rods that then go into a triple encased concrete and just sit there. Now, the federal government had a dream on what to do with this. They were going to take it to Yucca Mountain in out west. And then in 2010, they stopped with the plan. And now all over the country, you have nuclear energy waste, very minimal, but you have some that just sits there. Now, this is not like The Simpsons, where everything turns green and three-eyed fish come out of the water. That has been the most damaging thing. The Simpsons, wonderful show, but really damaging as we try to talk really openly about this small, small, tiny amount of nuclear waste. However, whether or not Palisades goes back online, Fermi and Cook create very small amounts of nuclear waste. They then sit it in the concrete-encased sort of tombs, and it sits there until the feds decide that they're going to have some concrete plans.
But there's still a broad base of support for nuclear energy. Republican Rep Filler, who talked to us, is one of the Republicans who was all in on this. Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer supports this. Democratic lawmakers. Essentially, you know, there is this thought that nuclear energy is carbon-free. So when you have Democrats sort of pushing for higher renewable standards, nuclear is a piece of this puzzle. And among the Democrats who support this is former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm, who actually returned to Michigan to announce this conditional federal loan for Palisades.
Well, the Palisades reopening isn't a done deal yet. It will need to get through a regulatory process and get approvals before it can move forward. And the loan from the federal government will need to be paid back. But it seems like this is very much like on the train to getting done.
Right. And the attention here, too, is signaling a resurgence, I think, in nuclear energy. It's bringing Democrats and Republicans together for somewhat different reasons. Republicans, you know, are really into sort of this reliable energy. That's what they have been hammering as Democrats talk up renewables. So Republicans think nuclear is more reliable than wind and solar. Democrats are thinking we're trying to be carbon free. Nuclear is a step there. And it's not just Michigan.
That's right. California has extended the life of one of its nuclear plants as it turns to more renewable energy. And 34 countries recently signed a pledge looking to nuclear power to achieve a, quote, climate neutral globe.
So wouldn't it have thought that nuclear energy would be the one issue bringing Republicans and Democrats together in an election year? But we'll see where this goes.
Well, we're going to talk more with Representative Filler. But first, we're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasman. Today, we're joined by Republican State Representative from the 93rd District, Graham Filler. Rep Filler, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So we want to start today by talking nuclear. To sort of kick off this conversation, I think a lot of people hear the word nuclear, hear nuclear energy, and just think, whoa, what year is this? What are we doing? Can you talk a little bit about why nuclear energy is a good thing?
Yeah, and let me give you the 1,000-foot view just to get us all started. In about 2019 or 2020, I was on sort of, I don't know, intellectual conservative Twitter, And they were all talking about nuclear energy and how the next 10 years was going to show that, well, or the last five, new wind and solar are a nice thing, but aren't baseload and are weather dependent and have short shelf lives. Why aren't we investing more in nuclear? We know the cost has been too high. We know the regulatory burden has been too high, but it makes countries more secure from environmental factors with coal closing down. It's incredibly reliable. It's incredibly powerful. And why aren't we investing in that? And I said, you know, I agree with all that. And so I took some of those ideas and I turned them into a bill that became a law here in the state of Michigan, which just said that the state needed to study, do a feasibility study on nuclear energy. And what people don't know, and what I didn't know at that time, Michigan is and always been a top 10 nuclear state. We have three massive plants. We have one that's hopefully going to be back online, Palisades. We have a nuclear engineering and nuclear physicist degree programs at Michigan and Michigan State that are exceptional. And at our peak, we were creating damn near 30% of the state's energy from three nuclear plants. We are a great nuclear state. We have good soil, solid bedrock that doesn't shift. You think about Fukushima and putting a nuclear reactor on a fault line. So all the factors are in our favor. And when I started talking to people, both Democrats and Republicans, about voting on that bill, I started hearing some really good things, especially from my Democrat colleagues. Hey, I was always taught that nuclear is bad and wind and solar is the only thing we can talk about. But to me, nuclear is as clean as it is and has an incredibly long shelf life. You know, we're talking 40, 50, 60 longer years for a reactor. And I believe in clean energy and I believe nuclear has to be part of it. So that was the sort of impetus behind my push. And all of a sudden, in the last 5 years or 4 years since I started that conversation, the conversation has changed remarkably in favor of nuclear, both at a state, a national, and an international level. And that's been driven by a lot of factors leading up to sort of myself and Joey Andrews and Sam Steckloff and McFaul and Pauline Wenzel putting together a very pro-nuclear regulatory package that would make Michigan, you know, one of the best states in the country for a good, strong, pro-nuclear regulatory standard. And so that's sort of the full background.
Yeah, we really wanted to dig into those bills with you. This is a bipartisan package. There's several different pieces of legislation in that package. And you've said that the aim is to spur nuclear energy generation in Michigan. So talk us through what is in these bills.
Well, my bill is the SMR bill, and that's small modular reactors. And that's the one that everyone's talking about as the next thing in nuclear world. So right now, if you build a massive nuclear plant, let's just call it $15 billion. Well, that's a lot of money. And the regulatory burden from the federal side is hard. So SMRs or ASMRs are small modular reactors. I'm in my office at the house here. They're about the size of my office, maybe smaller, and they don't pump out as much energy, but they pump out a really strong amount of nuclear energy. They're being used in things like nuclear subs and in other countries that don't have as stringent nuclear standards as Michigan. Russia runs SMRs. China runs SMRs. Bill Gates has invested billions into SMRs. That's exciting. That's the next thing. There are some states that are now defining SMRs like my bill would do, so that if, like Palisades has said, they want to put two SMRs down next to their recommissioned reactor. If they do that, and my bill's in law, then it would set a clear base for the size of the reactor and the acceptability of that reactor. What we've unfortunately seen, it just happened in Illinois, is you can write these SMRs into law in a wink-wink way that will ensure they never come to your state. And that comes from anti-nuclear groups who will say, oh, we allow nuclear, but we wrote it in a certain way and put a certain size on it. So that's my bill. There are also multiple bills that says if you create education, nuclear-related education, then you can get some grant funding and some incentives from the state. That's exciting. I don't want to say Michigan will just be in a great nuclear state because we have Fermi and Cook and Palisades. I want us to be a manufacturing state. I want us to be a state where you go and you get your nuclear physicist degree, and then you go to a lab down the road and keep your money and your expertise and your tax dollars and your family all in Michigan. So I think that's what will help with those bills. Rep Wenzel's bills are incentives if you create nuclear energy, which is very prevalent throughout the industry. And that's sort of the basis of the package. What we did is scour the nation for what pro-nuclear bills are being run and took some of our favorites and put them all in one package. And that's how we came up with it.
So you've mentioned Palisades a couple of times. So this is, you know, a right now shuttered nuclear plant in Southwest Michigan. You know, why, you know, is this plant on the path to potentially reopening?
So I think there's a feeling that Palisades closed, not because it wasn't pumping out massive, clean, powerful electricity, but because it required investment that the owners and possible future owners just felt didn't quite make sense. Wind and solar, especially solar, can underbid nuclear in the market right now many times. So they were like, well, we're just going to decommission. And then it became clear kind of two things. One, nuclear energy became a little more in vogue. You couldn't talk about it for a long time, I've been told, especially after Fukushima. And then number two, they felt like it might be viable. And if we didn't have Palisades back online, then I'm not sure that a lot of the clean energy goals that exist out there, either written into law or philosophical that are out there, are even remotely doable. And I think without Palisades, our grid here in Michigan suffers terribly. Reliability suffers. The ability to pump enough energy into the state of Michigan suffers. So I think there's a need. And I think Granholm, Whitmer, myself, pretty much everybody who looks at the grid and how much energy we're creating sees Palisades as a really good addition. So the state said, we'll give you a couple hundred million. The feds were the key, because that's the recommissioning costs. But Holtec, which is the owner, is way down the line. They've been working on this for a long time. This isn't like a, we'll start tomorrow. They're doing it right now. And so I think if you want to look at trends and you want to talk about big picture concepts, let's talk about the fact that Republicans and Democrats are both seeing nuclear as the past, the present, but also the future in the energy field.
I feel like one of the concerns that people have when they think of nuclear power plants and nuclear energy is the waste that can be generated from these power plants. So I'm curious about what happens to the nuclear waste that, let's say, the Palisades becomes recommissioned. Where does that go? Like, what happens with that?
Yeah, and just like any conversation in nuclear, you get the 10,000-foot view, and then I'm going to go into it. So all the nuclear waste created in the state of Michigan since the 1960s, I think, when we started, could fit essentially on one football field. It's small spent fuel rods that then go into a triple encased concrete and just sit there. Now, the federal government had a dream on what to do with this. They were going to take it to Yucca Mountain in out west. And then in 2010, they stopped with the plan. And now all over the country, you have nuclear energy waste, very minimal, but you have some that just sits there. Now, this is not like The Simpsons, where everything turns green and three-eyed fish come out of the water.
All right, three-eyed fish.
That has been the most damaging thing. The Simpsons, wonderful show, but really damaging as we try to talk really openly about this small, small, tiny amount of nuclear waste. However, whether or not Palisades goes back online, Fermi and Cook create very small amounts of nuclear waste. They then sit it in the concrete encased sort of tombs, and it sits there until the feds decide that they're going to have some concrete plans. So the first thing I want to say is nuclear waste is absolutely the first thing, along with possible meltdowns that people talk about. And there's a positive and negative on really every side of the energy grid. So let's just take solar. It's vaguely sunny today in Michigan, which is a shock because we live in like the third grayest state. We all have vitamin whatever deficiencies. Solar doesn't work a lot in the state of Michigan, but it's cheap on the market and you can just kind of throw it into a field and it doesn't melt down. So you have all these positives and these negatives that that come into the energy grid. So I will take the positive of the massive amount of nuclear energy that gets created, that's clean and that's reliable and that you can turn it up and turn it down a little on the reactor, along with the tiny, tiny amount of waste. I think that's a good trade-off.
So switching gears a little bit here, you announced earlier this year that you are not seeking re-election in November. Why did you make that decision? You know, what are your plans now after December? Will you potentially go back to sports blogging, maybe with a soccer focus this time?
We got two Liverpool fans, super fans. I don't know what you root for, but yes, I always said I'd do 6 years in the House. I've loved the House. I love the House for a lot of reasons. It's famous in Lansing. It's like herding cats. But I just love, I remember getting a call once. I was on Mackinac Island and somebody said, we have to run this bill. You have two yes votes on a committee of 13 and it's got to be on the floor on Tuesday and you have 3 days to go get them. And I just remember thinking like, let's go do it. This is awesome. It's this great bipartisan piece of legislation that protected hospitals and healthcare workers. So I love the wildness of the House. I love the bipartisan nature that you've got to cut deals for so many things that you think are worthy. But I said 6 years and I stuck with that plan, even though they extended term limits. I don't have a set plan on what I'm going to do going forward. I know I was at the Attorney General's office for 6 or 7 years before running. I think it's a great office. I think the AG is a great position, but that's years and years off. And so I'm not one of these people that has to have political power to exist. Like I've got a hole in my heart and it needs to be filled by a political title. I'll be able to do some work in the advocacy or the lawyer, being a lawyer in some manner. But I do want to tell you, especially during COVID, I love this concept in the House that we're very accessible. People would call me and say, hey, my unemployment benefits are not coming in. Like I'm down to my last dime. And myself and my staff would go to bat for them. And that's the sort of personal touch of the House. And we would get people, you know, the money that they deserve from the state. What a great impact upon individuals. But it was time. I will miss it deeply, but it was time.
So with little less than 8 months left, what do you want to get done before leaving the House?
Ooh, I got some big ones. Guardianship reforms that we got through the House into the Senate. I want to tell you that that's the farthest anyone's ever got guardianship reforms. I give some credit to Kelly Breen, Representative Kelly Breen, for taking some of my vision and her vision. And that's a pretty cool thing. I'd like to work on the fentanyl sentencing bills that exist out there. I find them to be completely doable. Someone can get charged under the same guidelines if they sell fentanyl or cocaine or ecstasy, and that's bizarre to me. That makes no sense. This nuclear package, I'd love to get it rolling. I don't think we'll have a problem finding support because both parties like nuclear, maybe for different reasons. I've got a great cannabis bill that I'm working on with Rep. Wilson and Senator Irwin that would combine medicinal and recreational. And that's something that people in the industry and at the caregiver side have been talking about for a long time, but we've just kind of done it right down the middle, bipartisan, and we're going to release that bill at some point. So those are some goals that I've got.
On the election front, you know, the House has, you know, a big election coming up in November. Republicans want to take majority back. Do you envision, you know, yourself helping still on the campaign side of things for your colleagues?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm completely bought in to a Republican majority. I think balance will be better for the state. Right now, if a bad idea gets rolling in a Dem legislature with a Dem governor, there's almost sometimes no stopping it. even if they don't all want to vote for it. They feel this strange pressure. I'd love to see some balance, some balance to sort of bring back the balance in the state legislature. And so I'm all in. A lot of my work will be working with candidates on messaging and on focusing on their district and my vision about how people just want authentic, straightforward candidates who are not spitting back partisan talking points, who will say, this is what I'm going to do for the district. And so I'm all bought in and I'm working hard on that.
What do you think is the Republicans' strongest message heading into this year's election? What do you think is the biggest issue that the GOP is going to have to defend this year?
Yeah, I don't think Joe Biden and Michigan Democrats have sort of made this state more awesome when it comes to the economy. And the economy touches everybody. And so I think that's going to be the number one message, which is vote for some balance so we can do some pro put money back in your pockets policies. And you leave it at that. That's when people sit around the kitchen table and talk about what's affecting us. Well, what's affecting you is that inflation and whatever Biden has been doing at a national level has filtered down to the negative here in Michigan. I think that's always going to be our strongest.
And do you think, you know, there's anything, Republicans are in a good position in a way being in the minority, but do you think, you know, there's anything that can hurt Republicans? What do you think you'll have to defend?
You know, that's interesting. Because we haven't led or sort of a Republican agenda has not been run the last 2 years, it's a little bit of a different feel because you don't get the responsibility, but you also don't get the praise. And so I'm not sure if we're going to be on the defense on some things. I know the abortion question was the big fight a couple years ago. Michigan now has some of the most expansive abortion rights in the country. And so I don't think that's that somehow issue that that's something that's going to be on the ballot or argued about heavily as a major topic. And so I will say some of the union stuff, you know, unions are losing members, but yet tons of our legislative focus has been on giving the union more, making sure union members get paid more, making sure union bureaucracy gets more money. And I'm not sure those are popular campaign things, especially after the massive strike. So I don't know if somehow that's like a slam dunk winner for the Dems, but yeah, I think it comes down to Biden from a national level and a referendum on him.
What are you telling candidates as you're sort of ushering them through this process? I mean, do you have sort of general messaging aside from the economy that you want them to focus on, or is every candidate different?
No, I think every candidate is different, but I think there's a general concept overall, which is Republican candidates have done great in the House and the Senate for 1 million years because they speak to kitchen table issues and they speak really honestly about who's struggling in Downriver or what's happening in Oakland County or how something like illegal immigration impacts public safety. And we've just always been better at speaking at a granular level. And so I just tell them, know your community, know exactly what your community is talking about and cares about, and go into that. Don't get caught into national talking points and spinning those back.
Another thing I wanted to talk to you about while we have you here is the second look legislation that Democrats are bringing up in the House right now. So essentially, these bills would allow those in prison who have served at least 10 years to bring their case up and potentially get resentenced. You know, this is something that you are taking a strong opposition to. What's wrong with this idea?
You know, I'm so excited you're talking about this because I don't know if you guys remember, but my first term, I was the reform guy. I mean, expungement, which I got great bipartisan support, civil asset forfeiture, 107-3 out of the House, raised the age, which made complete sense. 17-year-olds are not legally adults. Why do we charge them as adults, right? And now I'm like the tough on crime guy, which is, I just have to laugh about it because I just try to work on policies that make sense in my view of the justice system. Sometimes reforms are needed. Sometimes courts are doing the right things. Law enforcement is doing the right things. So Second Look is so aggressive because you have very, very heinous crimes, heinous criminals who go to prison. It's really hard to go to prison. We're talking about rape, attempted rape, murder, attempted murder, arson, carjacking, kidnapping, domestic violence, child abuse in the first degree, some of the worst things you could think of. And all those crimes typically pick up a 10-year or higher sentence. So all those individuals have the right under this legislation to get a re-review of their case. It's absolutely going to throw the judiciary here in Michigan into chaos, which is already busy, which is already scraping for prosecutors and for just ability to put cases on a docket. So first of all, you blow up the judiciary. And for what? When an individual is sentenced for rape in the state of Michigan, all the factors are thrown in. Attempted rape, murder. Was the individual young? Did they pull the trigger? Or did they just drive the car? Does it seem like they have a chance for rehabilitation, or was the crime just so heinous and it was in cold blood? All those things are considered and then thrown into a hearing. And judges are pretty straightforward when they're given a range from the sentencing guidelines. I've been given 15 to 20. I've decided 15 for attempted murder was correct. It seems like you were young. You've taken responsibility. I'm going to put you on the low end of that spectrum. And so not only does that already happen, but this just re-victimizes the victim who's already been through something incredibly difficult. And then all of a sudden a hearing has to be held, a hearing that under this legislation is skewed towards the individual who's sitting in prison, which makes no sense. And so I'm interested in reforms. If this was written for, I don't know, prisoners who were over the age of 60 and were, you know, actively had health problems or, you know, something like a medically frail, I'm interested in talking about this. But this says if you have asthma, then the judge has to consider you, medically frail and should push to let you out. That has nothing to do with the seriousness of the crime. This was written by a national group, and it's really anti-law enforcement. It's really ugly politically. It's bad for the judiciary, and I hope it doesn't go anywhere, and I will take a hard line against it.
Are you open to any tweaks or sort of like massaging of the language in it? You know, there's the argument that older prisoners are expensive to house in prison and maybe aren't necessarily a threat to public safety, or that, you know, people who have very long sentences could have been rehabilitated. I guess, is there a way that you see through this with some changes?
So Second Look, probably not, because of the aggressiveness of the way it was written. It's everyone. There's literally one carve out, and it's for Ethan Crumbly, which is if you commit a mass shoot. Like, it's the most politically cynical carve out I've ever seen. And I've seen some politically cynical carve outs, but it's everyone. So you would have to really gut the bill to even start a conversation with me. I was open. I ran medically frail back in 2019. I'm open to that. I am also a big supporter of truth in sentencing. You guys know what truth in sentencing is, which is, If you get 8 to 10, you have to serve 8. And it's something we do for victims, and it's something we do for law enforcement and certainty, and allows people to live who are the victims and want to plan their life around when their domestic violence perpetrator is getting out of prison. So I'm not going to go to war with truth in sentencing. I really support the prosecutors and the attorney general and others who've stood in support of truth in sentencing. So I'm not sure Second Look is the vehicle for reforms. Maybe some discussion of medically frail or the older prisoner population I'm interested in.
All right. Well, Rep. Filler, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Thanks for covering the big stuff. And never walk alone. Go Liverpool.
Go Liverpool. Go Reds.
Thanks again to our guest, Representative Graham Filler. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with the Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasbin. Additional production and editing is by Hearns Laguerre Jr. Mixing, mastering, and music is by Sam Bobian, and our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this show and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or a comment wherever you listen. You can also subscribe, follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure you tell your friends about how much you are learning from Mishmash. We aim to increase the brain power, so make sure you send them a link so that they can be smart too. Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, you can support WDET by going to WDET.org/give and becoming a member of WDET at WDET.org. We'll talk to you next week.